Bonnie and Friends. Bonnie Simon. Jacaranda FM.
Jacaranda FM. Wow. Mind-blowing. So I've got goosebumps again. If you listen to today's music like Adele, you know, Amy Winehouse and stuff, and you, I mean, how old is that song? Hey? Miriam Makeba, the late great.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome.
But there's an interesting story. A mom got arrested. What's that? Nkombot.
Nkombot, yes.
Nkombot. And she spent the first 6 months of her life in jail.
Yes.
Miriam, because her mom was sent to jail or whatever.
With her and her little kid, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, what can you tell us about Miriam Makeba? What a legend. She was married to Yuma Sakela. Yeah.
Yes.
For a long time.
And Stokely Carmichael as well.
And she worked with Paul Simon. She won a Grammy, I think, a couple of Grammys when she was overseas.
Yeah.
But just a little brief history. Why do you love her stuff? You've worked with her. You've produced some stuff for her. Tell us about the lady.
Miriam was one of those very humble. She was always motherly. You know, when I was signed to Virgin Records, and I had to record an album in Brussels. Little did I know that she lived in Brussels, and she was told that there were all these South Africans. I had met Miriam in Lesotho in 1980 when they came down with Yuma Sakela, and very gracious, you know, and elegant, and of course, and on a loose side a bit, you know, there was all this aura about her. But, of course, the Beatles, Harari, were the rock band of the time. So we had to be part of the gig that we did with them and Yuma Sakela, and most of the crowds that we pulled there knew that we were going to play, and they came. These were the young people now that, you know, that knew Harari. And so when we went to Brussels to record an album for Virgin Records, we heard that she was in town and she lived in Brussels. Of course, Marvin Gaye lived there as well. And the same studios that we're recording, Marvin Gaye had recorded. This is where he actually recorded one of his hits. And Miriam came to the studio. Oh, I had asked her to come and visit us in the studio. Of course she came. And guess what? She comes there with two big pots of food. You know, to come and feed the children of my country, as she would say. Abantwana bam, you know, her children. And she loved cooking. And she would come to the studio almost daily with the pots, you know, to cook for us, you know, because she just felt that the food that we were eating were not really South African food, and it was not tasty. And she had this thing called the mazi pepper, the chili that she, you know, made. And once I recorded the album, there was a song special, so she said to me, "Why don't you write a song for me?" I said, "Mazi, I write a song for you." She said, "Yes, write a song for me." I was sweating. I thought, no, Miriam cannot be serious. I mean, Miriam could work with anybody. There was Hugh, there was Kaifas, there was Quincy Jones, the best producers you could think of. And here I was, I come from Soweto, and she asks me to write a song for her. And I used to work out. I used to run a lot every morning. And in my mind, I kept thinking, what am I going to write about? And I was jogging at this park. And a song came. And I said, the only way I can is to write a love song. But a love song between myself and my mother, you know. And this is what the song that I could do with for Miriam. I went back to the studio and I started playing the piano. And I wrote a song called Mama. And she came in. She belted it. And after I recorded the song, she said, "Now I want you to produce an album for me." I said, "Mazi, you're not serious. No, you can't do this to me." She says, "Yes. Please produce an album for me." and we recorded an album called Welela. Welela was probably one of the first, probably one of the few albums that she, that would go gold, platinum. And she just loved working with me. And then we created a great relationship. I've got pictures of us having to go to her house. But what was even said, it was when I was leaving. I know it was around 1988, 89. And the first thing she said to me, do you think we'll ever come home? I said, Mazi, yes, you will come home. And she, and of course, you also came from New York to join us to play trumpet on the album. And both of them walked, you know, took me to the airport. That was also one of the most painful memories for me, you know, because he was going to New York, Miriam was staying behind, and I knew they wanted to come home. And I said to them, what would you like me to say when I go home? Just tell our people we love them. Maybe someday we'll come home. And I said, you will. And I was crying because she was also crying. And I could see that he also wanted to cry. And I wrote a song, that Refugee Come Home. And the rest was, when she came home the first time, the first person she wanted to meet at the airport was, I want to see Sipho. So I had to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get to the airport to meet her. It was such an emotional meet because Miriam had not been home for well over 30 years. Mm-hmm. And of course her mom had died. She was never able to bury her. And we had to make all the arrangement to take her to her mother's grave. It was such an emotional experience. But for her to be home was one of those great, great moments.
While you were there, did Miriam and you ever speak about living in exile and what was going on in their own country and the political side of things? I know you don't like politics very much, and also
I do.
We will
do as long as they make sense.
Yeah, not on Twitter.
Yeah,
but in that, did they discuss that? Because they wanted to come home, and they weren't allowed to come home. You know, it must have been their families here, their friends, and everything. And that loneliness, you know, must have seen it in their eyes.
Bunny, anybody who's never really been out there, I went to Brussels to go and work. I didn't see any, besides Miriam, there was nobody else that I knew that I could relate to. And this was 3 weeks. That was enough to drive me insane. Because what was even worse is that I never saw black people. You know? And I think at some stage I saw one guy who was just walking across the road, and for a moment, I wanted to greet him in Sesotho. He said, and this guy came from Gambia. All this was, hi, how's it? You know, I think he spoke in French or something like that. So I was actually going crazy. And I still believe that people, you know, people should have come home and got counseling from that painful, you know, exile experience. I mean, I was away for 3 weeks. So you can imagine being away from home for 30 years.
Sure.
What it did for you.
The sacrifice, eh? Let's talk a bit about politics. Growing up in the 80s, 70s, 80s, you know, the atmosphere, I mean, the curfews at night, the police, the brutality, the situation in that, in those days, I mean, I went to a nice school, I had a nice house or whatever, and there you were down the road from me, mm-hmm. and you weren't allowed to come to my house, or because I remember you weren't even allowed to come to my church. You know, things like that happened, and we also saw that as white people. Mm-hmm. And the benches, whites only, I mean, those things hurt us as well. And how did you feel at that stage? I mean, the friends around you, the people, your white friends that you had, what went on in your mind at that stage? Were you going to become an activist or, you know, let's create a war revolution? Or being a musician, was it easier for you to accept or what?
I think the whole thing makes everybody angry. I was just as angry as ever. You know, I always tell people that people think apartheid was just about separation of amenities.
Bonnie and Friends. Bonnie Simon. Jacaranda FM.